is November 3rd, 2014. You are looking live at Mattoon, Illinois. This is episode 453 of the Will Leach Experience Podcast on Sports on Earth. I am Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. I am about to go on vacation. I am actually in the way station, like Mattoon, Illinois, gateway to the Pacific Rim, if you will. I am in a way station of Mattoon, Illinois, because I drove with my wife, my two children, to Mattoon, Illinois to drop them off with the grandparents, because I'm going on a week-plus vacation to Hawaii, Kauai specifically. This is the first time I have really taken a vacation at all since my son was born, and he turns three in a couple of weeks, so I should probably do it. But I'm in Mattoon, Illinois, because I'm flying to Hawaii tomorrow, but I'm here for one day to talk to my parents, let them know how not to kill either one of the children while we are gone, and to relax before I take off. So this is my last thing I'm doing before I go on vacation. There will be no podcast next week, though there will be one the week after, because I'm going to be gone for 2 weeks. We are doing a college basketball preview edition, because we have not... By the time I come back, college basketball will have started. I believe it starts on Friday, November 14th. My Illini play Georgia Southern. I will also be watching the Georgia Bulldogs, a team I am the season ticket holder of, play at Georgia Tech. But we're going to talk about other teams other than those two for some reason. I don't know why. I just want to talk about them. But we're going to talk about those two teams today with Matt Norlander. He is a college basketball writer for CBS Sports. He used to write for us for Sports on Earth, but I think they got him wrapped up exclusively there now. But we're going to have, that doesn't mean we're not going to have awesome college basketball stuff this year. It just won't be by Matt. But you should check him out, read his stuff, and listen to him talk with me now, right before. And really, this is the last thing I'm doing before I go on vacation. So I hope I don't have too much senioritis on this podcast. And here's Norlander. All right, Mr. Norlander, first off, thank you for doing this with me. Now, we wanted to verify that you were part of our Sports on the team last year, but this year they got you wrapped up at CBS?
Yeah, well, it's always a pleasure to come and gab with you on the podcast. I very much appreciate it. It was, yeah, I was fully planning on doing some side work again for Sports on Earth this year, but then my bosses at CBS lobbed me an unexpected phone call and basically offered to lock me in. So I'm living that contract life now.
Listen, and that's great. I felt like we were lucky to get you in between the raindrops for a year. Like that, what, before they realized, wait, we can't lose. We want Norlander all to ourselves. If I were CBS, listen, you'd have Seth Davis spot if I were CBS. So don't listen to it. So the fact that I feel like they were just a little bit late on that. But
well, it was, listen, I got a chance to write a few things on the site last year with Sports on Earth that I was really excited to do and proud of. And yeah, it was a cool thing. And you know, Sports on Earth is still something I read, honestly, every week. With you, even plenty of times per week, depending on the content and if it's too Cardinals heavy or not.
Yeah, I'm dialing back.
As a Cubs fan.
Yeah.
So
once the Cardinal fan became... the term Cardinal fan actually became a pejorative.
Yeah.
Like, regardless of anything else, just to be called a Cardinal fan was like being called a jerk. Like, you didn't even need to say, he's a jerk. Oh, and he's a Cardinal fan too. Like, people just understood if you said a Cardinal fan, you were a jerk. I'm dialing back on that a little bit.
Yeah, actually, how do you feel about maybe being like 1% of the reason why that happened? I feel because you're not a jerk in any sort of way, but you are clearly one of the most well-known sports writers that happens to be, and you've written about this before, you wrote a whole book about it, but like, you don't hide the fact that you're a Cardinals fan. That should, you know, really be part of who you are as a person and as a sports writer. But because of the fact that you are such a well-known Cardinals fan, and now, you know, with Drew McGarry and plenty of other people kind of railing against the very nature of being a Cardinals fan, I mean, do you have any sort of bitterness at this turn of events here?
For what it's worth, Drew McGarry makes a practice of being railing against the practice of being anything. So, like, you know,
true.
I mean, there's literally, like, his whole thing is the haters guy. Like, it was just our turn. Like, it was our turn. So
the rotation. All right,
and to be fair, there's a little bit more material to do a Hater's Guide to the Cardinals than there's a Hater's Guide to the Rays. I will grant that.
There's,
but that's That's race. That's Drew's thing, and more power to him. He's good at it. So, but and though I'm wondering about this because, like, you know, every year he also does the Haters Guide to the NCAA tournament. Now, I happen to know Drew. Drew is a friend of mine, but I know he doesn't watch college basketball at all. Like, he knows nothing. He actually only watches. He watches less college basketball than he watches baseball, and he barely watches any baseball. So, like, it's very weird. It's always this kind of strange thing when people like write about the thing that you love from a all encompassing. Oh, Kansas State. That's the other Manhattan, you know, and like just things they're just like just discovering the sport, you know, and like they like the way that like Gus Johnson will just like very clearly was just given a paper full of notes and it was like, oh, here's my biographical detail about this team. I know nothing about them otherwise. I wonder if that's frustrating for you, someone that's a diehard college basketball fan, to see as popular as the tournament is, it definitely brings in the amateurs a little bit.
It absolutely brings in the amateurs. I would argue more than anything outside of maybe the – I don't even think the Super Bowl would qualify because people kind of accept that as kind of like that one day American sports holiday. Everyone gathers around the couch and it's like, oh, why did they do that on that play? With the tournament, it's a, you know, it's a 3-week long thing, an elongated thing. It's something that kind of, you know, just seeps throughout all of American culture, sporting culture, beyond that, you know, it really extends. So yes, there is a certain element to the time. By the time we get to March, well, there's a couple ways of looking at it. One, I've got plenty of beloved friends here up in Connecticut, and of course, you know, that is very much, hey man, who's in your bracket? I'm like, right. I feel like honestly, just putting up a status on Facebook, being like, "Don't listen to me ever." So that's inevitable. But yes, you do get the drive-bys when you have the
well. Also, like college basketball is a difficult sport to like. You just have to follow
it's a lot. I honestly think it's the most difficult. I don't say this proudly. I mean, there are 351 teams. So you can easily say half of those teams don't matter. I won't argue with you whatsoever. But when
that's
you get
still
down,
fun. That's part of the fun of college basketball.
I know. And for me, I do follow those teams. I know second and third assistants on – I know the director of basketball operations at Nevada. Like, it's just right. – so there is a concentration that spreads throughout. So, yeah, there's a lot to follow. And that's actually kind of a daily, weekly challenge as part of the job description is to kind of realize, okay, the content and stuff we should be writing about and the stuff I really care about. Sometimes those do diverge, and I need to realize that writing, you know, 1,000 words on this and this might not make as much sense as honestly. And I do fight this some, but sometimes, you know, you work for a major media site, you have to kowtow to it. But, you know, if you're going to write about Kentucky, that's going to have just more general interest to it than if anyone's going to challenge Wichita State in the Missouri Valley. That's just kind of a hypothetical. So
look at numbers. This is why just no one should look at numbers. Twitter followers shouldn't be published. We would all be happier if we were just actually trying to do good things rather than trying to do things.
I agree with this 100%. And by the way, I talked about this last year on the podcast, I think on our season preview, but college basketball gets this bad rap for being a 1-month sport. I'm telling you, man, like, I understand it's not as big as the NFL and college football. No one said it had to be as big, but it's still extremely big. I mean, it's got the longest offseason of any major American sport, and because of that, it's kind of why I love it so much, because by the time we get to it, I'm just dying for the games to start. And I like that it's the fact that it's so condensed, but there are relevant, meaningful games that will happen here over the course of November and into December, non-conference stuff. You get better non-conference games in college basketball than you do in college football. Part of that is the nature of college football only has 10 or 11 regular season games, and college basketball has more room to afford more matchups. But the fact of the matter is the beginning of the sport is more interesting than what college football has. And I do like college football, but yeah, I'm constantly, I feel like I'm just having to bat away some criticisms while fully accepting the fact that I know where college basketball kind of stands in the greater realm of American sports media.
Listen, everyone, the problem is everyone thinks that TV ratings are all that matter, and they're not. And the idea, and therefore the NFL and college football are unassailable, and everything else that doesn't match up to those things are therefore, well, why are we even bothering with this? This is a niche sport. As if, like, anybody gives a shit. Like, who care? Like television ratings, don't get me started.
We have talked about this before. We are right there on the same page. It does not always, you know, it does not have to be one
it's
single
lazy,
measure.
And it's the laziest form of media reporting. Just the idea to be like, oh, there's the television ratings. But half the time, like, listen, half the, nah, I'm not going to remember. We're talking about college basketball.
Okay.
I would like to note, by the way, as we talk about the start of the college basketball season, that, you know, because there's always this talk every year, like, how should we kick this thing off? Why is this not, why is there not like a big kickoff day? And on one hand, I get that. On the other hand, I'm kind of glad that we're not playing on aircraft carriers anymore.
Yeah,
like, I'm kind of glad that, like, on one, like, you know, they're like basically Friday. Are there any games before Friday, or are they all Friday the 14th?
No, there's 157 games Friday, November 14th. That's the first day of the season. Okay, so I didn't have a problem with the aircraft carrier games, but for people that did, I get it. It was a little sticky, and logistically, it was problematic
and windy.
And windy, like, yeah, no, yeah, windy. No, I get that. I get that. Without a doubt, I get that. I guess the biggest game that opening night is kind of cool. There's a, and this actually, this is tied to CBS Sports Network, but it would be cool regardless. But Michigan State, VCU, Tennessee are all going to Navy, and they're having an Armed Forces Classic. And so they'll, you know, there's that. And then, of course, every year, previous, you know, Michigan State and UConn played in Germany last year. Oregon and Georgetown played halfway across the world. So you're getting some of that. But in terms of, like, the first day needing to be this big thing, it doesn't really bother me, to be honest. You know, that's Friday, and then 5 days later, we've got the Champions Classic with, you know, Kentucky, Kansas, Michigan State, and Duke in Chicago. There are plenty of things that are happening. You know, Wichita State plays Memphis. That's a good non-conference game that happens 3-4 days later. So, I don't really care that the first day of the season doesn't have, you know, it's not week one of the NFL season or however you want to compare it to. Again, unnecessary. November's going to have plenty of awesome stuff. I mean, yeah, there'll be stinkers, but for anyone, you know, listening to this that just enjoys college basketball but might be a little unfamiliar with what to expect in November, you know, Kentucky, Kansas, Wisconsin, Arizona, Villanova, Gonzaga, Wichita State, these are teams that are going to be really good. They're going to be challenged and playing other really good teams that might have a number next to them on the TV when you watch, so you know that they're good games, so to speak. We'll have plenty of that over the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season, and that's really all you can ask for.
You know, one thing about Kentucky, you always have to start with Kentucky, is Kentucky is, of course, at this point, not just a basketball team, but almost like this ongoing referendum on the sport. Like this ongoing, oh, are they, is everyone going to have to do it the Kentucky way? Is the Kentucky way the wrong way to do it? And last year was like really that kind of incarnate. Like people spent most of the year going, I mean, they lost to South Carolina at the end of the year last year. And it was like, see, doesn't work. And then boom, they go to the national championship game here once again this year, because now they have this, I think really for the first time since he's been there, this great incoming class and all these guys that are still there.
Right.
And it doesn't seem like he's ever – I think Larry Brown talked about this. I heard this on your podcast, but the idea that he says he's going to have to cut down that rotation. What is the state of Kentucky, not just as a team but like as a concept this year? Is this the most talent-packed team that they've had? Does that speak to something larger about college basketball, or do we make a bigger deal out of that?
I think what you're getting to here with Kentucky as a referendum on college basketball, I think they are the exception, actually. They are the aberration because of the way John Calipari operates. For people that still want to kind of be like, oh yeah, John Calipari, he cheats to win. No, he's actually gotten Kentucky to the point where they're just so, he's so good and they're so good, like people, kids want to go there. Like they want, they're like, it's been reversed, whereas almost every other coach, even Krzyzewski, has to really recruit and ask. With Calipari and Kentucky, purely by when you look at the numbers, and he's put in, you know, 20 pros just since he's gotten to Kentucky. We're not even talking about his entire career. You've got 5-star kids who have been coddled for 3 or 4 years up to that point. You know, begging's too harsh a word, but, you know, wanting very much to go and play for Kentucky. So I consider him very different from, and that program very different from the rest of the way college basketball operates. In terms of the team, this you can fairly, people might laugh when, you know, over the past couple of years we've had, you know, last year's team was supposed to go 40-0, something I reject, and I refuse to ever legitimately debate a team going undefeated until we get to February. It's just a personal rule of mine, so we won't be talking about that. But They do, in theory, have the most talent Calipari's ever had, just purely based on the fact that there are 10 players on this roster that could conceivably be drafted from June of next year till June of 2017, depending on how long certain players stay. They had their own legitimate NBA combine. They changed the practice from a combine, and Calipari basically, this was smart. I mean, he's brilliant in a lot of ways. And he said, I don't want to have to deal with 3 scouts here this week, 2 next week, 5 the week after throughout the season. I just want them to come in October, and then if they want to knock on my door again, come middle of January, that's fine. But he invited them over, you know, down to Lexington for a 2-day thing so they could watch everyone.
It was a TV thing, too. Like Billis.
It was on ESPN. They, you know, Jay Billis was hosting it along with.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty good recruiting tool, too.
Hey, oh, unreal.
Literally, not only will scouts come and watch you, there are so many scouts that we will have to create a national televised thing for them to all come and watch it, hosted by the signature star of college basketball.
And typically, you know, it waited until about 4 o'clock in the afternoon when these kids that are being recruited by Kentucky would have been out of high school classes at that point, and they could have watched it on TV, you know. So not that they couldn't have DVR'd, but there's just the general mindset behind that. In terms of players, just real quick here, there's a kid named Carl Towns who's a freshman. He's a big man. He's the big name this year in terms of the guy who will probably be the highest draft pick, but, you know, that said, they could have a few lottery guys. There are the two Harrison twins. People obviously will confuse them. Aaron is the one that hit the big shots. Mm-hmm. Andrew is the one that's closer to a point guard, even though they're both kind of shooting guards. Andrew got a little more flack last year. They're both probably going to go to the draft next June. Decent chance both will be first-round picks. Aaron more likely than Andrew at this point. Alex Poitras will probably start. He's a junior, was thought to be a one-and-done. He's kind of redefined his body. He's a freak dunker, good athlete, probably the 5th or 6th best player on the team now, but he's really good. And they have, like, that aspect of the team that Calipari had the first couple of years and he always had with Memphis, just, like, a veteran kind of player. You know, DeAndre Liggins was that guy a couple of years ago. Now Poitras is that. Willie Cauley-Stein's back. He got injured at the end of last year. He didn't even play in the tournament. And had he played, maybe UConn doesn't win the title. But he's another potential lottery pick big man. I mean, I could literally – I'll mention one more guy because he's really cool. So they got this point guard, Will. I think Kentucky's going to be the most fun to watch as they've ever been because this kid's 5'7", probably. His name's Tyler Ulis. He's not a one-and-done guy. He can shoot it from deep, but he's like – he's thin, he's small, great passing, good speed, but you look at him and you're like, why is an Eastern Kentucky player playing for Kentucky? Just based off physical appearance walking off the bus. He was a 5-star recruit. He will not start the season, but I think he'll get a lot of playing time, and it wouldn't shock me by January if he's on the floor in close moments. Just a very different kind of point guard from that Cal's had, even going back, if you want to go all the way back to Derrick Rose and really look since then. Cool kid who I think a lot of people are going to be like, whoa, who's this tiny kid on Kentucky that's balling out? I think he'll eventually just become a fan favorite.
Well, I, like Alex Poitras, spent the offseason redefining my body, and I would like to move over now to specifically one of the things for me. You know, every year in the KenPom ratings, the Big Ten seems to anymore kind of run away with the best coverage. I think they've got 11 of the 14 teams, Big Ten teams, are in the KenPom top 40, which is kind of amazing. But
whoa.
Yeah, it's amazing, right? 11 in the top 40. And so, like, it's completely wild, and it really feels like, and even that, I feel like some teams are even kind of underrated from that. Specifically Illinois, but
of course,
when you look at the one thing, of course, the league doesn't have is they don't have a championship. It's been since Michigan State. There is a general sense that Wisconsin has the best chance of any Big Ten team in a while. Some might have said since Indiana 2 years ago, but they went out in the Sweet 16. The best chance of anyone in a while to, because they're clearly the best team in the Big Ten, even this conference is the best in the country. Wisconsin is clearly, like, from 2 to 10 is like this jumble, but clearly they're number one in the conference. Do you think Wisconsin is a legitimate championship contender?
Yeah, I do. I like them a lot. I was, you know, 2 years ago, I was down, relatively speaking, on Indiana as a national title contender. I would consider Wisconsin that. Obviously, they made the Final Four last year. Frank the Tank Kaminsky, everyone calls him Frank the Tank because he's big and white, and it's easy to say, and it rhymes and all that. I actually don't think he loves that name. But anyway, he has a unique skill set. He can step out and shoot. He can post. Kind of a goofy kid. Sam Decker is the better player, in my opinion. Those are the two studs. The reason why Wisconsin has a good chance to win it all is because I consider those guys two of the top seven or eight players in college basketball, and they play for Wisconsin. Wild. And then they've got guys like Nigel Hayes, who's really awesome, and Trayvon Jackson. So they only lost Ben Brust is the only player they lost of significant value. It's basically, you know, the thought that Wisconsin can do this is that they bring everyone back. Bo Ryan never finishes worse than fourth, and now he has basically all of his weapons back. I actually think the Big Ten's going to be down from what it was, certainly 2 years ago, a little bit from last year. I don't know if a lot of people think that or agree with me on that, but I'm kind of fading the Big Ten in that respect. I think Wisconsin will clearly win it. I'm not alone in that belief, but sure, I would consider them among the five most likely teams to win it all. And if that happened, it would be a pretty significant two-year run for Bo, because he got to the Final Four last year, and that was like a big to-do because he's considered, honestly, top 10 X and O mind in the game, just hadn't been able to quite break through.
Also, he should have won that game. Like that Final Four game, dude,
we were sitting right next to each other at that. I know, they should have very much won that game, but that's also the tricky thing is, like, the tournament is obviously its own beast, and that's why we love it. You can kind of lose a game you shouldn't lose because there are so many factors in play, from players to coaches to environment to atmosphere to nerves to being out of your element entirely. So they should have absolutely won it. And
Harrison hit Florida. That crazy shot. Right.
Exactly. And Florida should have beaten UConn. It was up 16-4. But we live in this alternate universe. And
who did Connecticut almost lose to in the first round last year? I saw them in Buffalo. St. Joe's. Yeah. They damn near beat them in the first round last year.
They came within one rebound away. If St. Joe's had come down with a rebound, and there would have been ideally a foul there, they would have gone up by two possessions. I don't remember all the details. It's been a while. But yes, it was one rebound. I think it was Amita Brima grabbed it. He got it. There was a foul. They stayed alive, went to overtime, and that was the closest game they played by final margin in the entire championship run.
Again, another reason the tournament is so awesome. We're going to do this again, of course, before the tournament. And also, I'm going to make you do the NIT bracket again this year.
That was so much fun. But you know what? Now you mentioned that. I totally forgot to – didn't we say we were going to, like, figure out who was going to do better or something like
that? Yeah,
I think
you did beat me because I had no teams in the Final Four, and I think you had one. So,
okay.
Yeah. So yeah. I think neither one of us did amazing. Neither one of us did particularly well on that. So you've got Wisconsin, you've got Kansas. Give me three other teams most likely to win in your eyes.
Yeah. You said Kansas, but I know you meant Kentucky.
Oh, sorry, Kentucky. Sorry, Kentucky.
Yeah.
Kentucky.
Okay.
And,
so, all right. My pick to win it all is Duke. Duke to me has. You've seen his name. Jahlil Okafor is the freshman big man. And for anyone that might be seeing this name and doesn't know too much about him, here's my take on Okafor. No, he's not related to Emeka. I think he will have a better season this year from a numbers production standpoint than even Emeka had when he won Player of the Year. He is a true low post big man with incredible feet, great passing, good rebounding, good savvy around the rim. I've seen him in person. I followed when he played international ball. From everything I've seen, I would be very surprised if he was not an All-American at the end of the year. And I've been saying I think he'll have, production-wise combined with Duke's success, I think he's going to put up one of the 25 best individual seasons over the past 15 years or so, which, you know, that's lofty stuff, but it's not like crazy elite. But I think he's that good. I think he's that dominant. He's got a point guard that's a freshman named Tyus Jones that's good, got good savvy with him. Duke's got a lot of good guards, though. They got good wings. Rashid Suleiman's back. A little bit of a streaky player, but really good. Matt Jones is a guy that plays for Duke that's a backup guard who's kind of just like one of those Duke players who occasionally will make really big plays, and you're like, who the hell just did that, and why is Duke winning again? I hate Duke. You know, people that do it, like, he's one of those guys that can kind of contribute that kind of stuff. They bring back so much that they are my number one. You know, it's kind of like the team you pick number one in the preseason is the team you think will win it all. So that's Duke is actually my pick.
If they can get past Mercer again.
If they can get past Mercer, exactly. And you know what's... All right, so here's a quick side question for you, okay?
Yes.
So the Mercer thing, like the Mercer thing's big because they did the Nene and they lost to Duke, and it came at a moment during that tournament run where I feel like, and I could be wrong, but it feels like all the other games were like boring or nothing was happening, and Mercer won, so we all remember it. But it feels like people are forgetting about the fact that Duke was a 2 that lost to 15 seed Lehigh. Like, that seems like that's already been forgotten. To me, that's even a little bit wilder. But you can make the argument that Lehigh team was better than that Mercer team.
It is funny, though. One of the things I love about the tournament, too, and sometimes it gets said, like, so much of it depends on the time of when things happen.
Absolutely.
Like my personal favorite first round crazy upset buzzer beater is Northwestern State over Iowa.
Yes, no one remembers that.
That shot was ridiculous out of nowhere.
Three Lundqvist game too.
Yeah, and I wonder if part of it was if it wasn't a weird time. And like it was really, I think it was the last game of those afternoon games. Before into that one. I don't think they even do that anymore. Where there's that one game smack in the middle of it. I felt like BYU was playing in.
Right, and it was a random West. It was like, or it was very often like a 116 that was a low game. But the reason why people don't remember it is, one, because it's Northwestern State. Two, Iowa didn't have any studs that year, it was Iowa. But yes, that shot is really like one of the all-time great tournament shots, and not enough people remember it. Yeah, from the corner to beat them at the buzzer.
Yeah, and I was doing Deadspin at the time, and the broadcaster for Northwestern State, I believe, was a student there at the time, but he was doing the local radio broadcast, and he was a commenter on Deadspin. So it was so amazing that, like, because of course after that call, someone loaded up the call. Hey, here's the local announcer's call. We're like, Northwestern State has a local announcer. He's like, yeah, it's me. Hi, and it was really awesome. I always remember that one pretty vividly.
That's cool. All right, two other quick teams. Arizona. If I didn't pick Duke, I would pick Arizona and then Kentucky. Arizona has a kid named Stanley Johnson. He's probably a 2, a shooting guard in the NBA, but more of a 3 in college, kind of a combo. Kid has got personality for days. If Arizona's good and he kicks a couple of big shots, I'm telling you, a couple interviews in, everyone's going to love this kid. Just super composed, funny, good smile. Just a package you want in sort of a star kind of quality overall. They've got T.J. McConnell, who's a great, terrific Arizona-style point guard for Sean Miller. Bring a lot of people back. Brandon Ashley got hurt last year. Arizona dropped that epic game to Wisconsin in the Elite Eight. And it's actually dating back to your Illini and Arizona. They've had some brutal losses in the Sweet 16 Elite Eight over the years. But I like what they have overall. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, my colleague Gary Parrish, named him a preseason first team All-American. While I disagree with him being that, from an athletic standpoint and a playmaking standpoint, I think Hollis-Jefferson is a top 15 player, and I think Stanley Johnson is as well. They'll play amazing defense. Caleb Tarzewski is a traditional big man in the middle. They don't have Aaron Gordon, that like total freak anymore, but they're still so good. I think they're going to romp. Like, of every – we talked about Wisconsin's favorite in the Big Ten. I think Arizona is a bigger lock to win its league than any other team in any other major conference. I think there's that much of a distance between Arizona and, I would say, Stanford's probably the second best, maybe Colorado after them. And then – well, all right. So Kansas is a decent pick. They've got – they don't have question marks at point guard. It's more like who is going to be the best option at point guard. Devontae Graham is a kid that signed a letter of intent to Appalachian State, and then he got awesome, and then the race was on, and it was a huge ordeal. But the point is, this kid was going to play at App State, became good, now he's at Kansas. So is it going to be him or Frank Mason? Kelly Oubre is a freak athletically. Not quite what Wiggins was, but he's awesome. Cliff Alexander, who you obviously know well.
Actually, let's talk about Cliff Alexander. No, actually, let's talk about somebody else instead. I'm going to look like I'm going to talk about Cliff Alexander, then I'm going to change my mind at the last minute and pick another player to talk about, the same way that Cliff Alexander did when he picked up.
Okay. I see what you did there. Yes. Cliff Alexander was, hometown kid, so to speak, that Illinois fans. That was actually that was one of the more fun posts to make when Illinois fans like the.
Yeah, and I have to say, all told, I am an Illinois fan, but I that was kind of annoying. But again, it's like a 17-year-old kid. Like, stop yelling at him on Twitter.
I think actually we talked about this on a previous podcast. Yeah. So anyway, he goes to Kansas.
You and I and Van Pelt talked about it on Twitter. Yeah, we had a whole discussion about it. Because Van Pelt was like, "Man, that was brutal," and I was like, "Yeah, but maybe we should just allot that." Like when I was 17, I couldn't run my name in the ground with a stick.
Exactly.
Anyway, go ahead.
You know, I get you. It's a lot of this is like, let's just remember how old these kids are and what they're
and are not getting paid and are anyway
absolutely so anyway he'll be in the middle, he'll be good. Perry Ellis will actually lead Kansas in scoring, but I'm gonna say Gonzaga. I'm gonna toss them in here. My former colleague now at ESPN Jeff Borzello and I talked a little bit about Gonzaga. Listen, over the summer in terms of their like legitimate Final Four chances, this is with Gonzaga. I understand. People are going to basically dismiss them. It's interesting, and I've written about this before, but I might want to address it again later in the season. Gonzaga has had an interesting arc because they obviously went from the college team with the weird name that had a big seed that would win games and you'd pick them in the pool because they had the funny name and they had that one really awesome year. But they've gone from that to, first of all, they win their league every year. Every year, either regular season or conference tournament title, it's been like 16, 17 years in a row. It's absolutely ridiculous. That shouldn't happen. But yet Mark Few's done it based off of, you know, what Dan Munson started. That being said, now with that success and getting into the tournament every year and then basically not making the second weekend in most years, it's like, okay, well, you know, we're not going to buy a Gonzaga until they make another Elite Eight or Final Four. This year, they've got a lot. They have a lot back. Kyle Wiltshire, who played at Kentucky, but really that wasn't the right team or league for him. He, you know, he took a redshirt year off. He'll be in the mix. He can play low. He's a kind of a 3-4 combo. There's a big Polish dude, Przemek Karnowski, who should break out, so to speak. Kevin Pangos is their go-to scorer. He'll probably put up 23 a game, I should say. His freshman year, he had like a huge first game ever, and it was televised, and everyone like freaked out about Kevin Pangos. He's been good ever since, but he'll probably lead the league in scoring. Basically, I think they've got enough offense there. Byron Wesley is a transfer who played for USC, one-year grad transfer. He'll be really good. They've got so much there that if they don't, I mean, I'll say if Gonzaga doesn't win 30 games and isn't a 5 seed, I would say that's a disappointment. And we talk about how the tournament is so fickle, but really, like, you got to make the second weekend here. I think they've got Final Four possibilities with the amount of talent they have on that team. So they're not just, you know, a paper tiger, so to speak. I think they've got real ability there. So they'll be a fun team to watch and a team that I think we should expect to be in the top 15 of the rankings almost wire to wire.
Do you think the fact that some other mid-major teams have gone to the Final Four and kind of surpassed them has hurt Gonzaga?
Maybe a little bit. I think there is something to that. I've thought about that. Wichita State will be good again this year, by the way. They've got most everyone back. Yes, but when you've got VCU and George Mason and Wichita State, who, by the way, in 10 years, I think that's going to be like an interesting trivia question because the year they went was not the year that they obviously didn't lose a game until the tournament. They've had an incredible 2-year run, and they should be a single-digit seed again. A 1, 2, or 3 is a little too high of an expectation, but a 4, 5, 6 is certainly doable. They've got Ron Baker, who will probably be drafted. Fred VanVleet is making preseason All-American teams because he's just a super steady, really composed college point guard who's a little bit underrated defensively. But yeah, I think Gonzaga is also, because it's had so much long-term success, been elevated. I hate the term mid-major period because it's really a term in, you know, the mid-majority. Kyle Wellison came up with the term the red line because it's really more about how much money you're able to put into your program. That really, because like Greg Marshall does not fly commercially, you know, when he wants to recruit, he has a private plane. Like Wichita State is basically operating its basketball program on the same sort of level as a Villanova. Like they're not a mid-major period, but casual people don't understand that can kind of trickle through to the press and the way the teams are covered. And yeah, so there's some sort of effect on Gonzaga to a certain extent in that regard. Yeah.
All right. So because college basketball, I still am wondering if it's going to be able to survive without Aaron Kraft.
Oh boy.
Do you think who give me two guys, one, you said Okafor, maybe the target, but who's going to be the breakout star and who's going to be the Kraft like annoying white guy in the tournament?
Ooh, okay. I'm just going to like totally like answer this, but go over the top here. Because, all right, so in terms of like face of college basketball, just generally speaking, Okafor and Kaminsky, the two big guys, I can totally see like, you know, some early January profile on the two big men and how often are big men faces of college basketball. Right. Like, I can totally see that happening. I mentioned Stanley Johnson could be a good face for it if he's good. Van Vliet, an annoying white guy in the tournament. Will people start to hate on Ron Baker's somewhat Bama bangs? If Wichita State, because people started to hate Wichita State and resent the fact that they were so highly regarded, but Baker doesn't really say a lot. He's kind of stoic. Pangos. Yeah.
Who is this year? Who's the Chris Collins? Who's the Richard Keene? Who's the?
I get what you're saying with Kraft, because there was, you know, I didn't have an issue with Kraft, but I'm Tyler Hawes at BYU he can score, but he's something of a chucker. He's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. That's it. See, like BYU should make the tournament. Aaron White. I mean. First of all, I like Aaron White's game. Yeah, okay. So with the way that Aaron White is, he's not – I was thinking about guards. But, yes, Aaron White is a –
because he's loud. He makes – he's
loud. He's really athletic. He is a white player. He's a ginger too, right? I think he's got red hair. I could see the Illinois fan bringing up Aaron White of Iowa. But, yes, that is certainly a worthy nominee, and
there'll never be another Kraft.
There will be. Yeah. I mean, will be. Like, maybe not to that. Well, anything is
possible.
Listen,
not only that, but he took down a coach.
What do you mean?
He took down Pearl. Is it Pearl the guy?
Yeah. So, like, it was Aaron Kraft at the barbecue cookout to the barbecue.
The one worthwhile thing Aaron Kraft ever did in my eyes was take down Bruce Pearl. But again, that might be the Illini fan talking. Speaking of which, before I let you go, I need to talk about my two adopted teams. One is my team and one is my adopted team. One, of course, is Illinois and the other is Georgia. I'm a season ticket holder for Georgia this year. Unexpectedly finished second, tied for second in the SEC last year, though their bad start and the fact that they did not play Kentucky. The teams they didn't play twice, Kentucky, Florida, and Tennessee were among those teams. So they had a relatively easy schedule last year. But they still finished tied for second. Both teams made the NIT and did not advance far in our NIT bracket. You are of the belief, because I'm hoping is this is a year that both teams make the tournament. Because I think Georgia's pretty good this year. I think Illinois is better. I think Illinois is more likely to be a tournament team. You think Georgia is more likely to be a tournament team. Let's talk about Georgia first.
Yeah, I'm not as high in Illinois as most everyone else. First of all, Mark Fox is an awesome coach. We talked last year on the preseason pod, and I didn't think he was going to make the year. I didn't think he was going to survive it. But
I mean, he looked toast until that Missouri win. Right after his dad had died.
That was actually a story that I had been like, hey, I might write this, but if you want to write it, and I never ended up writing it. But yes, his father basically died, I guess, on the way to the Missouri game, like right before it or whatever. And after that, they caught absolute fire, so to speak, for Georgia in terms of what Georgia's capable of. And they went, 12-6. They were really good. I think they bring back enough. I think he's a good enough coach. The SEC still stinks. Like, it's brutal.
But that hurt them last year more than helped them.
It did in terms of getting into the tournament, but it helped him and keep his job in terms of, with a lot of these coaches and ADs, if you've got the record in the league and you can get to an NIT and you go on and you get hot, I think that can definitely help you to a certain degree.
One thing I think is cool about the SEC is they're like for a league that's not considered obviously a top basketball conference, they are stacked in coaches. Like Frank Martin's there, and like Mike Anderson's there, and Billy Donovan's there, and and it's really kind of amazing how many great coaches, and particularly now. Listen, I hate Pearl, but like he's gonna be his own kind of tip of the balance too.
He's got that program rocking already. And even like really good coaches like Donnie Tindall, who's going to need a few years at Tennessee. But only the ACC and Big Ten really succeed the SEC in terms of coaching. Yeah. I think depth overall. And then when you look at what the SEC really has not been able to do, it's kind of a joke. Kenny Gaines, by the way, though, I'm going to give Gaines love. He's a player that people listen to this podcast, they're like, who's Kenny Gaines? He plays for Georgia. Put up really solid numbers last year. In my opinion, should have gotten more love. But when you don't make the tournament and you play for Georgia basketball, it's kind of hard to do that. I would expect him to have a breakout type year nationally.
They're like an old team. Like they're all juniors and seniors.
Yes.
Like,
no, it is an old team. Yeah. That's why, more than anything, I think they're going to get to the tournament. I think it's going to go Kentucky, Florida, Georgia, LSU is probably my pick. But if you wanted to flip LSU, LSU's got a really good front court. But no, I expect them to do well. Non-conference wise, who do they get? They get Seton Hall.
They get Seton Hall at home, Colorado. They're in the NIT.
Which, by the way, I mean that thing is falling apart. Yeah. There's like four non D1 teams in that thing. That used to be like a really good chance to like, because in the NIT is the only one where if you get to the Final Four, you do it by winning. Whereas all these other tournaments, it's like let's take the four teams that have the biggest TV draw.
Well, what was the year that killed them? There was the year. Who was the team that made it that one year? They beat Kentucky, right? Who was it that beat? It was somebody. Yeah, that came out of nowhere like 5 or 6 years ago.
It was Gardner Webb.
Yeah.
That was Gillespie, and that was 2009, I think. Yeah. Yes, but yeah, I know. So anyway, NIT, you get to New York. Hey, I might be there if they can get through to see them in person.
And they're at K State on New Year's Eve.
Okay, so they can. K State is that's New Year's Eve.
Yeah, New Year's Eve.
That's a while. New Year's Eve. You never know. Holiday. You know that holiday Christmas break can sometimes be a wild card. But they beat K State on the road and Colorado at home. That's going to put them in tremendous shape because I actually think both those teams will be in the tournament as well. Georgia is good. Now, do we want to talk a little Illini?
Here's my case for Illinois.
By the way, I will make your case. I'm saying this right now. I only saying Illinois will be like first four out. They can totally get in.
Yeah, I don't think you think they're going to finish last in the Big Ten. But my case for them, as opposed to last year, which last year, let's say, I think that they would be like maybe last 12 out, last 8 out maybe last year. Because like you know, there was some idea. Remember, they almost beat Michigan in the Big Ten tournament. They were really hot at the end of last year. So I think Lunardi had them until the second to last week of the season. He had them in the final 12 out. No, they were never seriously close to being in, but they were at least – they salvaged the end of the season as it came to that last year. But here's my argument for them is really everybody's pretty much back except for Abrams.
If he was in, by the way, I'm putting them in.
But see, that's the thing. I don't actually think the Abrams injury hurts them that much because that's the one place that they have depth. I think they would have been in trouble because they were really disappointed because they thought they wanted Ahmad Starks to play last year. Mm-hmm. And the NCAA, and for no reason, as usual, said, nope, he has to sit out another year because they said he wasn't within the 100 miles thing that they have about the sick parents or so, his grandmother. But it turned out working out perfect for Illinois because now they get Abrams and they get Starks. I think they'd be in more trouble if they would have lost Abrams and Starks. Now the point is the backcourt is their strength. So losing Abrams actually is not that painful to me, and they're deep all the way down. The main problem with them last year is they couldn't shoot. They couldn't shoot at all last year. That problem with Starks and Cosby, I think, is generally in a lot better position. So I think they're a better team than last year. I think they're deeper all the way down. Front court is still a little bit of an issue, but I feel like if the guy that steps up there is Lauren Black. If he steps up, I think this is actually not only a tournament team, but a potential top three or four.
But a potential Final Four team, right?
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. Not yet. Cliff Alexander would have picked the other hat. Maybe, but I'm not saying that. But I think they're top three. I currently have them fourth in the Big Ten.
Wow. Okay. A lot of people are big on them. I think the Big Ten will be down. Not that that's going to keep them out of the tournament necessarily, but I don't know if the rising tide will lift all boats there. Their schedule is good overall, I guess. I mean, the problem is like I look at it in terms of quality on the team and who they're going to be able to play, knowing full well that there can be teams that get good that you don't think are going to get good.
Of course,
but, like, all right, so I brought up the schedule. Miami's probably not going to be a tournament team, and there's no guarantee that Illinois wins that game.
Right.
They get Villanova. I like Villanova a ton. I would not consider that a guaranteed win. Now they're
going to not to any stretch. That's a neutral game. That's a neutral court game. That's a coach versus cancer's game.
Correct. They get Oregon, who is going to be garbage. Oregon is like 8 scholarship players on the roster. So that's not going to help. Missouri is going to be way down. So
they're going to be like a quality win.
Correct. So games that, like, I'm telling you, 7 months ago, you would have thought Missouri and Oregon would have been much better games now than they are. So I think that's going to hurt them. Guard play, you're right. They got plenty there. I was higher on Ravonte Rice last year than I am this year. Still like him, relatively speaking. Cosby, we'll see what he can do. Starks, give me Starks. I'm big on him. Egwu down low, certainly. Really talented defensively. Really good around the boards. I think he could actually be a lot better too. I wonder about how they're going to share the ball. Gross is a good coach. I don't have anything necessarily against Illinois, but when it came down to it,
you monster.
I do that. Like, honestly, it's the preseason. It's fun to just maybe throw a couple of darts, and everyone is definitely, I say everyone, I just haven't seen anyone say Illinois is not a tournament team. So I'm just, I'm rubbing against that grain just a little bit, but I could very well be wrong. I enjoy when Illinois is good. I think
I will be at that Illinois Villanova game, by the way. So Craig's and I are making our yearly Illini pilgrimage to the Garden.
I will likely see you both there.
I think Indiana.
But you're going to be in seats, right?
Yeah, we'll be in seats because I think Indiana Louisville I think is the other game that day. I believe.
I'll definitely be at that, and so maybe I'll come up and say hi.
Yeah,
and
we'll be really drunk by then.
Yeah,
that's three games, to be honest, because I think Illinois is the
first
game.
That's what'll make it fun. I'll snap a quick photo and being like, these guys killed Dead
Spirit. It's hard to find college basketball games you can drink at.
Yeah, so, that's actually, you know what? That is a fair point.
So, all right, man. So, thank you for first off doing this at all. Thank you for indulging me on Illinois and Georgia as you do every year, and thank you for letting me bother you about this stuff all year. As you know, I nerd out about college basketball in a way that like you know, everybody has their tiers of things. Like, baseball is the thing that got me into sports in general. The Cardinals, really. Everything else, the Cardinals were a gateway drug to everything else in sports, but Illinois basketball is right there because college basketball is it's my jam, and you do it as well as anybody. So thank you for doing that, and thank you for letting me talk to you about this all year.
No, you are too kind to say that. I love the fact that you love it so much because the sport just needs more, you know, general sports voices to embrace it like that outside of, you know, post-Valentine's Day to April 5th or so. So I appreciate it, man. We'll talk soon, and yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, well, we'll hang on, of course. We'll do trivia, but first off, we got to do trivia, but we'll end this podcast here. So thank you to Matt Norlander. He's a college basketball writer for CBS Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt Norlander, MattNorlander. This has been the Willish Experience Podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We will be back in 2 days to see how Norlander, who I think it is fair to say, is as pumped up for this trivia contest as any guest we've had on the show, including Paul Feinbaum, who really didn't quite understand what was going on. So thank you for, so we'll see you and Matt then. Be safe.